Hello, everybody, and welcome to this, the latest episode of the Rewatch Project with Hannah and Mike. I am Mike, and with me, as always, is Hannah. How are you this Sunday evening, Hannah?
Oh, fabulous.
Ready for some Twin Peaks?
Very ready for some Twin Peaks after the longest day in the history of the world.
Well, the hours changed here in New Zealand, so it's dark early. We're moving into autumn as the rest of the world, moving into winter as the rest of the world. Or a large part of the rest of the world moves into summer.
Autumn, winter is my vibe.
Yeah.
It's my favourite time of year. It's the right kind of weather for me. I like it being dark when I go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's good Twin Peaks watching season
very
as well.
Very much, very much good
so
Twin Peaks.
So it seems appropriate. We'll quick bit of housekeeping before we get into that. And I should point out, this is the third recording I'm doing today.
You say that like it's some kind of like I've already lost my words already.
It's all right, we can edit.
Like it's some
a
kind
burden?
Of yes, like it's a
no, I'm saying
you.
It like it's a badge of honor. I'm like pumping out content today.
Yeah, it is podcasting Sunday.
Yeah, and I've and both of the other things that I've done, I have edited and put out. So I've put out two videos, one bit of audio content, and
If anyone has listened to the Chinstroker versus Punter episode about talking about Purple Rain, the one thing you forgot to say regarding what I thought about it is that Prince is the worst on-screen kisser I have ever seen.
Well, you've obviously never seen any of my movies.
Well, I'm not looking at you when I'm kissing you. I've got my eyes shut.
Well, let's just move past that, shall we? We just won't address that. But yes, so please do check out those.
Do you keep your eyes open?
Yeah, wide, like weirdly wide. I'm a starer. But no, do check out those. Check out also our friend's podcast. So Nate, the aforementioned Chinstroker versus Punter. His film, her movie, Film Bastards, Entertainment Landfill, which is back, I'm glad to say. They're doing a sort of spin-off series, which is the NIM movie club that Jason's doing.
Perfect.
So check that out. Also check out The Good, The Bad and The Odd and the Talk With Everything podcast, and also send us feedback at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can also comment on our YouTube channel and we will read those out as feedback as well. We are on Instagram and Twitter, where in both cases we are at Rewatch Proj. That's Rewatch PROJ. And we also very much appreciate 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. That makes a real difference to increasing the likelihood of people stumbling across the show, which is a great way of getting new listeners. And what that results in ultimately is more feedback, which is a great motivator to record more frequently and do more stuff, and can be quite an infusing element. So please do one or all of those things. But if you can only do one, email at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com or comments on the YouTube channel are very much appreciated. So Hannah, in the spirit of that, do we have any feedback on this episode?
Do you want me to talk about what we're talking about tonight first?
You know what? That would be probably traditional, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
Okay. Yes, please do. So you're not the only person who's allowed to mess up.
That's good.
We're a democracy.
Okay, so tonight's episode is called Slaves and Masters. The synopsis says, the police look for James in the Marsh murder. Boppy?
Can I just say as well, you sounded really Aussie there.
Marsh murder?
The Marsh murder.
Bobby and Shelley tell Truman that...
Shallow. Bobbo. Leo.
Stop, because I've got to say Leo next.
Leo.
Here we start that again. Bobby and Shelley tell Truman.
Harrow.
There's a reason you and I are married. Bobby and Shelley tell Truman that Leo escaped, and Bobby reveals that he saw Hanko shoot Leo.
Through the window. He was through the window. I mean, that's just accurate.
This has got an absolute vibe of Ace Mace.
Oh, God, yeah. I forgot about that. I can't believe, I was thinking about this not too long ago, that when they went to space, we didn't talk about that. How did we miss that? Ace Mace is on the case in space. He was staring us in the face. Oh, God. Sorry, carry on.
Okay. Oh, God. Bobby reveals that he saw Hank shoot Leo the night that Mel burned. Albert returns to Twin Peaks with information.
Alberto!
On Wyndham Earl Oaks.
Window.
Window.
Back to the window again. Oh, this is going well.
It's
I'm drinking fizzy water, yeah, by the way. Yeah. Hannah's drinking tea, just so you know.
Neither of us have had a drop of alcohol. Yeah. It's directed by Keto, Diane Keaton.
Oh, wow. The Diane Keaton, isn't
the
it?
The Diane
well?
Keaton. And written by Harley Payton and Robert Ingalls. I think we should hand over now to the one bit of feedback we have.
Is it Marco?
It is Marco. Who has provided us with some audio content.
I think we should do Mark the honour, not the honour, sorry, give him the correct respects and say that this is Mark from the Good, the Bad and the Odd.
Indeed.
Podcast.
And the Twin Peaks log.
Yes.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Hannah. It is I, Mark. Thought I'd send you some feedback. You've been asking for it, and I was kind of waiting for this current sort of slightly lightweight phase of Twin Peaks to finish, and I thought I'd jump in there so I could talk about the phase you've just talked about and some stuff about the phase to come. First things first, let me tell you where my personal rewatchings have got to, which I tend to do, even though you'd never ask for it. I am on the new Doctor Who now. I finished the entire classic run, had a great time with that. I'm partway through Tennant's run, so I've watched Eccleston, watched Tennant's, watched the amazing and rather wonderful episode, Runaway Bride. A really great episode, that one. Christmas episode, I really enjoyed that one. David Tennant and Catherine Tate are just off the hook, actually. I'm starting to think that Donna might be my favourite assistant or companion or whatever you call it. Really good. Also on Doctor Who, I'm really enjoying your Doctor Who perspective from a Trekkie videos, Mike. I think they're excellent. I'm really looking forward to getting to the Aztecs because that's got some important stuff here about should you try and change where you're at and those sorts of issues. There's also another story coming up that I always really enjoy and I think it's important, though it's often considered as a minor one, called The Meddling Monk. First time we meet another Time Lord, in fact. And I'm not sure in the story if he's considered a Time Lord, but certainly in retcon he is considered a renegade Time Lord. He's referred to as the Meddling Monk, the Monk. There's a female version in the extended universe called the Nun, and he's also referred to by the Doctor in other stories as the Time Meddler. So he is a significant character. We haven't seen him in a while, but he is a significant character. I finished Buffy. I watched all seven seasons of Buffy in the end. Yeah, Spike's the most interesting character. I think he might be earlier. But yeah, man, the stuff with Spike and Buffy is just off the hook. I think 5 and 6 are the best seasons. 7, it fell down a bit. It didn't pick up all the pieces quite as well as it could have, but it was still pretty decent. And the best thing about it, I think, was the Spike-Buffy stuff going on, what Spike's going through. Their relationship is really cool and I think interesting, and it's thrown into sharp relief whenever Buffy meets Angel again and how kind of teen romancy Angel and Buffy are. Angel and Buffy are compared to Spike and Buffy.
Well, point,
Spike
though,
Buffy
it?
Feels
He's
much
younger.
More sordid and twisted and interested, actually, to put a nail in that. So I really enjoyed that. I'm really pleased with your X-Files rewatching. Man, you guys are motoring through it. One show you might want to try and watch to finish the X-Files, and also, before I move off of that, you really should be watching The Lone Gunman, in my opinion, but that's up to you. Supernatural's worth a try. The Winchester Brothers stuff. Supernatural's really cool. I only watched season 1, and I keep meaning to restart it and watch all 20 seasons or whatever it is, but I really enjoy Supernatural, and it feels very much in the X-Files space too. I think you dig it. I jumped back onto my DS9 watching. I've just started season 3. I really have not enjoyed season 1 and 2 that much. Season 3 opened with a real banger of a pair of episodes called, I think, The Search, where we see the USS Defiant for the first time. That's a cracked out ship. That's kind of interesting. And they had to do something. If the actual space station's in a station, you know, it's a sitting duck to any kind of attack, isn't it? They needed some sort of heavy guns, and the Defiant is there. And so I quite enjoyed the opening of season 3, but we'll see what happens. Back to Twin Peaks, though. Twin Peaks, that's our main thing. Yeah, I've always loved the Dick and Andy show. You know that, Mike, for sure. And I think that was kind of the best part of this whole phase, actually, the Dick and Andy show. Not enough of it, in my opinion. I also quite liked, and you kind of skipped over, you weren't that bothered, was the, you refer to it as Vajazzling, I call it Lana the Sex Witch stuff. I quite like that, and it's funny because that girl is actually the lead female actress in Karate Kid 3, and I've only recently, maybe in the last 3 or 4 years, seen Karate Kid 3 and watched Cobra Kai through. And so it's funny seeing her younger than she is in Lana the Sex Witch in Karate Kid 3 and then seeing her as this. And it kind of works. She sells it. That's good. I also kind of like all of Ben Civil War nonsense. The real nightmare one is James and Evelyn's story. It is like the needle drop equivalent of a video story. Just taking stuff out of Twin Peaks and doing it somewhere else in a not very interesting story is just a bad idea, and it just doesn't really work for me. I did laugh at your last episode I listened to, which was the one that ends with... No, it doesn't end. It starts with them discovering the body with pointing to the chest piece, that episode. You did actually mention, oh, no, it's all killer from now on. I just wanted to remind you of some of the stuff coming up. Without doing any spoilers, that's kind of made me laugh when you said it's all killer from now on. Firstly, it's Windermere's master of disguise stuff. One of them works when he talks to Donna in the library. I've got to be careful not to do too many stuff, but some of his disguises are proper goofy, and I'm looking forward to seeing all that. I also quite like all the Pine Weasel Patch and stuff, especially when Dick Tremayne gets involved and sort of trying to sort of nurse everyone through. I also quite like the reoccurrence of the character, and I can't remember his name. I don't think he's even given a name. We've seen him earlier in the show, where he was trying to sell for Leo's sort of problems a harness. It was that guy, that salesman. Oh, yeah. He's Squiggy from Lenny and Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley, which dates me quite a bit. He appears again, and he always makes me laugh, and I wish he was around a bit more actually in Twin Peaks, but it's kind of fun to see. After imagine someone gets turned into a doorknob. I also always laugh at the bit when Cooper has a vision and the giants just say no, kind of indicate something bad's happening, and Cooper doesn't really take it on. It just always makes me laugh a bit. I will say the next episode of the one I've listened to, and you may have already covered this by the time you play this feedback, I don't know, or you might be about to do it, is directed by Diane Keaton. I really enjoyed this episode. She's a great visual director in this one, and I really appreciate it. I always look forward to the Diane Keaton episode, let's put it that way, and it's kind of interesting to see. That's really it from me. I'm really enjoying the show. I'm really enjoying the Doctor Who video content you're doing, Mike. So keep up the good work. It's great. I've gone through a lot. I hope I haven't taken too much of everyone's time, but I will be still listening and jumping in here and there, and letting you know stuff as certain things occur. But you'll have to wait and see. All right, then. That's me. So bye from me.
Thank you very much. Gosh, lots of chew on there.
We've got all the time that you want to give us,
yes,
Mark, anytime. So thank you so much.
A couple of super quick things there. Deep Space Nine, yeah, season 3 is great. If you're still not into the show once you get a certain part of the way to season 3, I just don't know what to tell you. Buffy,
He's only just started season three.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. But if he gets his way into it and he's still feeling it, then I don't know what to say. Buffy,
well, I do. Abandon it.
Yeah. Buffy, I like season five and six, but I think season two and three are the strongest seasons of the show by far.
Season six for me is the best.
I think season six has got some of the best stuff, but for me it's just so inconsistent. Like, you've got all that stuff with the three evil geeks, and it spends a lot of time on that. And I just don't think that... I think some of the highest points of the show are in that season. I'm a bit of a defender of season seven as well. I like season seven, but I'm glad that you like Buffy. I think that, you know, it's a crazy... It would be crazy if you didn't. And Supernatural, it's funny because the general consensus of Supernatural is it's the X-Files meets Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... But I've never watched it, and I know it's one of those shows where I know I'd like it, but there's just so much of it. So much.
Yeah. But, you know, you chip away at it and suddenly you've watched it all.
Yeah. And we do like having a big watch, don't we?
100%. I am so pleased to hear that you think Buffy and Spike are the best combination, because I do too. And you're right. Buffy and Angel is teen romance versus Buffy and Spike's more emotional, meatier.
Well, romance. Adult relationship. I mean,
an adult relationship. I mean,
the show says Angel and Buffy were an idealized relationship in the mind of a naive girl.
Yeah.
Really, you know. Yeah. And, you know, he turns evil when they consummate their relationship. And basically, what that is a metaphor for, aside from just the fact that, you know, losing virginity can be traumatic, and the whole thing about, you know, guys can turn into douchebags as soon as they've got what they want. Yeah. There's that metaphor as well. But also just the fact that Buffy grew up and realised, and their relationship was never the same afterwards, because she entered into the adult world, and their relationship, it's like, you know...
Movie love.
Well, he was a vampire, she was a vampire slayer. You know, when you're all doughy-eyed, you're like, well, I don't care, love is...
Love will conquer.
But then she became an adult. And when you're an adult, you have to be pragmatic and go, okay, well, that's great, but how's this going to work?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's one's better or than the other. I think that they serve different dramatic functions at a different point. But I would say that clearly the Spike and Buffy relationship has got more to it from a emotional complexity. But I think that the power and the effect of the relationship that Angel and Buffy had was much more iconic and much more in keeping with what the show was at the time. And you can see that. You can see its influence on things like Twilight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that actually had a real...
I don't think anyone's doubting the cultural significance it had or the influence it had on other things. It's just not the better relationship.
Yeah, well, again, how are you measuring that, though? Are you talking better?
On my opinion.
Yeah.
That's how I'm measuring it. That's all I can measure it on.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a much simpler, almost fairy tale kind of thing.
I think Spike understands Buffy far more than Angel ever does. Yeah. I mean,
there's different ways you can judge it.
Even after they're together as a couple, Angel, I mean, there's a shorthand to Buffy and Spike's relationship that Angel and Buffy...
I think we're having different conversations. So I'm not saying that one is a better relationship as far as, you know, the actual relationship itself. I'm just talking about them dramatically as devices within a story, you know, and I just think that they're trying to... Well, I'm
talking about them as real people because, you know...
Yeah, well, no, but I think that it's for different ways. That we're like,
I get really offended by people who don't exist.
Yeah, well, so, no, I mean, I'll see that, like, I think in the beginning of the last season of The X-Files, when, spoiler alert, when Mulder and Scully weren't together, I could tell that you were irked by that. And I think it's because you watch things more emotionally, whereas I tend to watch things a little bit more mechanically, is it, for want of a better word, you know, like I'll be watching it and thinking about the storytelling. And again, I'm not saying that that's better or cleverer like that.
But we do. Like, I fully agree with you.
Like, there'll be times when I'll be watching something and I can tell that you're being prickly about it. And I'm like, this is great. What's your problem? And then I'll be like, oh, it's because you don't like what they've done. You know, it's...
Like, I'll be sitting there feeling fucked off that this person's decided this other person's no good or whatever. Mm. And you'll turn to me and you'll go, that was all one shot. And I think, who fucking cares if that was one shot? I'll show you one shot. Yeah. But that, I also think that's very much the difference between a male and female viewer.
Well, I think there is, and I know how it sounds.
I mean, I know that's stereotypical, but...
No, but yeah. But I know how it sounds when a man says to a woman that they're being emotional, but I think that often...
That's the case. In fact,
that is the case.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that, I'm a total pushover. You're like, whenever there's an emotional scene in a film, Hannah will always be like, oh, you have a little cry, you have a little cry.
Well, it's like when we were in the car the other morning and I burnt my lip on my cup of tea and you said, oh, do you want to pull over? Because I was driving at the time, listeners. And I said, no, I'm fine. I'm not that much of a fanny. And you and I started laughing because the implication was that you absolutely
yeah, that was not lost on me. But I do think it's interesting that we have those differences because you'll be almost acting as though you think what you're watching is bad. Like I'll be like, oh, I'm really surprised that Hannah's not liking this because it's good. It's a good story. It's well made. It's well performed. Mm. But then I realise that you have taken. Almost personal offence.
Yes.
At the fact that the creators of this decide to go a certain way with characters.
Yeah.
And you're angry at the movie or the show or whatever it is that you're watching.
100%. About
that, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just endlessly fascinating to me, you know.
I can take personal offence at something that's happened in a movie.
Yeah.
And hold it against actors who have nothing to do with anything. For years.
Dear Die Hard, do you know Lethal Weapon?
But, yeah, like, this is why I don't watch horror, because I am way too committed to be able to watch something and detach myself to that level.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And as far as what Mark was saying about Doctor Who as well, like, I'm looking forward to watching the modern Doctor Who, because I've not seen most of that, but at the rate I'm going, it'll be like, 4 or 5 years before I get there,
because there's just so many. Just speaking to what he was saying about the Runaway Bride episode and Donna being his favourite sidekick, or I don't know.
Companion.
Companion, that's the one. We saw Catherine Tate on Saturday.
Mm.
We went to the Armageddon convention
with our kids here in Wellington,
affectionately nicknamed Welly Geddon. And she was one of the speakers.
Yeah.
And she walked right past us when we were sat in
I did not notice.
No, yeah. Mike had pointed out 3 times that she was talking in a panel discussion while I was negotiating with our son that no, he was not going to be able to purchase a $3,000 furry wolf outfit. And then we were sitting in this kind of chill out area in where the cosplayers were getting
it's where they go organized to do repairs and all on that their kind costumes. Of stuff.
And she was escorted directly past us and I was mouthing to Mike, "It's Catherine Tate." He was going, "What? I can't hear you. You need to speak up."
You sound like I've got one of those gramophone funnels in my ear.
You were like, a bit like
"Can
that.
You speak up, laddie?"
It was fun. It was really fun.
And as far as the Twin Peaks stuff goes, I mean, when I said, "Oh, it's all killer from here on," I know that there's still season 2-ish stuff in here, but I feel like we're over the hump.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're
basically what we're saying is there's no Evelyn and James. You know,
well there is.
Yeah, I know, but there's no like, oh God, we're back here again.
There's no episodes where you're going from scene to scene across 4 or 5 objectionable storylines.
You're not having someone launched into the sky from a cheerleading thing.
But also crucially, Wyndham Earl's turned up, so you've got a forward momentum. Yeah. That's what I mean.
You've got the big bed.
Yeah, is that you've actually got some coal in the engine, you know, moving things forward. So that's a positive thing.
Yeah. And you need to tell us, Mark, if you're keen to talk about season three or, you know, the return with us at some point, because yes. I think that's really important.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right, well, what we're going to do is we're going to watch the 15th episode of season two of Twin Peaks, and then we will come back and tell you what we thought of said episode. So should we do that now?
Yep.
All right.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, and welcome to Film Bastards, a podcast where three friends, two of them married and two of them podcasting life partners, chat everything from new releases, trailers, news, and an eclectic mix of other film goodies, oh, and many, many, many tangents. You can find them by searching your podcast provider or check them out on Twitter and Instagram by searching Film Bastards. You never know, you might like it. And if you don't, well, we don't really give a f***.
And we're back, so we've finished watching episode 15 of season 2 of Twin Peaks. Do you have any initial thoughts, Hannah, before we get into the breakdown of the episode?
I thought this was fairly solid, but I can't say that any one thing really grabbed me as being the thing that I was pleased to watch this episode for.
Okay.
There were lots of, like, I like the conclusion of Ben's, you know, southern adventure, shall we call it. I like the fact that all of the James and Evelyn shenanigans is kind of wrapping itself up. And, you know, delving a bit more into Wyndham Earl and, you know, how he's enslaved Leo to work for him, the items that you're shown to see where he's heading next for what he's prepared to do was all interesting stuff. I enjoyed it overall. I suppose for me, I think I probably didn't enjoy it quite as much as the last episode.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean it wasn't good. I just, it didn't connect with me just as much as that. Anyway, what about you?
I largely agree. I think I liked it maybe a little bit more than you. I think the thing that this episode had going for it was the first time where it felt like there was actual filmmaking happening. Like there was actually...
Visually, it's really lovely.
Like there was a sense of style to the episode. And I think that, I mean, you mentioned the James Evelyn stuff. I actually quite enjoyed the James and Evelyn stuff in this episode.
It's probably the only time it's quite compelling.
Yeah, because it felt like there was actual interesting filmmaking going on there.
Yeah.
And it actually genuinely felt Lynchian. It didn't feel like it was trying to just be quirky, you know? And I also liked the fact that it felt like the episode had forward momentum. So whilst nothing really, like you say, jumps out or there was any real, you know, kind of punch the air moment, so to speak, it felt just like overall the quality was just a lot steadier. And it felt like even the elements that weren't working in previous episodes felt better because there was actually a kind of an engine.
Some style to it.
Yeah, but also from a storytelling perspective, the fact that there's actual mystery and stakes.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a bunch of stuff happening.
No.
And it feels like, you know, they've kind of cleared the decks a little bit. Like a lot of storylines have ended. So it's very much, you can see that they're making room for the main storyline. And I really enjoyed this episode. Well, should we get into the breakdown?
Let's do it.
Okay, let me just find my notes. So we open up on a very Lynchian ominous shot of chess pieces.
That was really nice, the way it goes through all those pieces and kind of focuses. Doesn't it? It finishes on the queen, doesn't it? Mm.
It reminded me a lot of that shot much earlier in the season where they go in through that hole in the in the tiling in the wall.
Yeah,
it absolutely felt a lot like that. And
actually, it's quite a bookend episode because it finishes on a visually striking image.
And one of the Lynchian things that it does quite well is a couple of things: is the use of sound, the use of dropping frames to give a weird stuttering effect to things, but also the use of symmetry. Like, there's a lot of symmetrical character movements and things in this episode. Well,
like the lineup of military men at the bar.
Yeah.
All turning their head at the same time. And the police officers
who walk out during the scene with Evelyn.
Yep.
And I love the fact that, because it always cracked me up that she pronounces Jaguar, Jaguar.
Jaguar. Jaguar.
And when the guy's spelling it, he's like J-A-G-W the car, because he's confused by their pronunciation of Jaguar as Jaguar, you know. So he spells it phonetically. And I like the fact that they kind of call out that little sort of like affectation. So we see the three cops in unison and we go over to Wally's. And just the fact, again, the kind of incongruity is very Lynchian. The fact that there's opera playing in this little hick bar where there'd probably be, you know, Garth Brooks playing, or Joby, you know, oh God, I can't remember his name, Toby Keith or somebody like that. And James and Donna are there, and Donna calls Ed. There's that weird moment where that guy walks past and they all just go, "Hi, Frank," like, you know, all at once. And we see Bobby and Shelley go to see.
And Bobby, it's like he's regressed back to the pilot.
Yeah.
In his belligerence towards
authority
and just being just a mega douche.
Yeah, just uncooperative for the sake of it. And he tells them that Hank shot Leo. I love the fact that Albert is just like, get a life, punk.
I know.
I like the way that Albert.
I love how they embrace.
Well, it's as though since Albert's declaration of love, you know, in the earlier episode where he talked about how, you know, the basis of his work is love. It's like he can't go back now.
But I think also there's a lot of mutual respect there because they kind of had fisticuffs as well.
Well, also they've been through something together.
Yeah.
You know, they went through
them.
All of the kind of craziness.
Yeah.
We see when Albert shows them the map of Wyndham's route. It's a big, it's a C.
It's a C for
Cooper, you know.
Not C4 Cat?
No, well, probably not. I like as well that Albert calls out Cooper's fashion suicide, as he calls it, you know, with the going rustic. We see Wyndham Earl learning about Leo's rap sheet as well, and he's kind of wearing long johns.
Terrible, dirty long johns.
Yeah. And he puts like a kind of like a low jack on Leo, a zapper to control him.
So I always thought it was like a electronic, like those electrified dog collars, you know, that like the behavioral ones that they have, that you could like, they have like a perimeter on them, and if the dog gets too far away, it zaps.
Yeah, like they use them for like aversion therapy for animals, and
I mean, sound horrible.
And we see Ed and Norma in bed. Not so much kissing, I bet you're relieved about
this. This scene really made me laugh because, honestly, like, Ed starts off like, oh, terrible, 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 terrible. And then the camera pans over to Norma. It's, oh, more terrible for me, more terrible for me, more terrible for me. Back to Ed. No, definitely more terrible for me, terrible, terrible, more terrible for me. Back to Norma, no, definitely I win, more terrible for me. And then Nadine comes in and just
rips the door gets off.
Into bed with them, doesn't find that strange in the slightest, and you're sitting there thinking, no, most terrible for her, really.
Yeah.
She's lost an eye. She has regressed back to a high school self. She's got so much adrenaline coursing through her body, she can't open a door normally. And she's talking to her husband and his mistress just after they've shagged.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how you, like, I want Ed and Norma to be together.
No, but also, but Nadine has been horribly controlling and abusive to Ed for the last 20 years of his life as well.
Yes.
But nobody has done well out of that relationship. No,
but you can't help but feel for her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, particularly as she has regressed to being a child, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, she was going to kill herself at the end of the last season. Exactly. You know.
Because she knows how awful she's become. It's like she's become controlling and, you know, holding Ed back because she knows.
Well, she knows he's only married to her out of pity.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not that enough.
Her lack of sight in one eye is a reminder every day that that's the only reason he's married to her. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she needs to find something for herself.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. But she's not going to be able to do it at the moment because she's insane.
No, absolutely.
You know, yeah. So I mean, that's not helping the situation. She tells them about her and Mike. We see Cooper and Truman go to see Josie and question her about Jonathan, her assistant, who was killed. We see Eckert call her. We get a bit more business with Ben. We see Johnny Horn again for the first time since early in the first season, replete with his native cultural appropriation.
Do you ever see Ben Horn's wife ever again?
Yes.
There was that one episode where they had dinner.
And she has been in it a couple of other times since then, just like but very early on. She's in it again. She's in the final episode, actually, of season two. So we see Jerry being an opportunist and basically talking to Audrey about, well, you know, I've got a few interesting projects that I'd like to be able to push through. And she's just like, no. You know,
I love how she shuts him down.
Yeah, she just kind of like, you know, just, you know,
had enough of this crap. Yeah.
And we see that they've got like a cast of people involved, like some confused looking employees from the hotel are there. Yeah. We see Donna go to see Evelyn. And I like that scene as well, where Donna's kind of saying to her, you know, she comes across as naive, but she's right. She's like, you just like to make everything seem pointless and stupid, you know.
Mm.
And that it's kind of, it's not big and it's not clever.
Mm. I that's just reminding me, when James and Donna are at the bar previously, when before she rings Ed, and he's saying to her, I know I can talk around, I'll you know, I know she'll listen to me, and her kind of making that connection that, okay, well, they've obviously shagged.
Had a relationship.
Yeah. And just that sort of understated upset that causes her.
Yeah.
It was nice to see an understated reaction to it because Donna as a character is quite over the top and dramatic. So it was nice to kind of like,
see her go, I don't have time to deal with that part of it at the moment. Yeah,
but also that it's a big enough effect on her that it's almost too big for her to process.
Yeah.
I thought it was really well done.
And mentioning that scene, actually, I forgot to say at the time that the one nice little Lynchian touch is the barman who keeps asking her if she wants anything.
Yeah.
And he keeps popping back. And just that kind of weird overstepping of boundaries that you see quite a lot in Lynch films, like characters just being kind of like bothersome.
Yeah.
We see we learn about the transient's name was Powell, which was Caroline's maiden name. We learn that Pete is a great chess player. So Cooper goes to him about, look, can you help us play a defensive game?
Mm.
So we're going to minimise the amount of players that we lose. Mm-hmm. And again, we're seeing the show figuring out how to use the characters. It's like, right, we've got this great ensemble. Let's give them stuff to do, you know?
Mm.
So they're kind of seeding that a little bit. Harry goes to talk to Norma about Hank, and Shelley goes back and asks to work at the diner again.
I love their conversation while Norma's dusting a giant ice cream.
Which you see her walking really around with earlier in the episode as well. And I like how just over it Norma is. Like, Truman's like, look, he's going to go to prison this time. She's like, good.
Yeah, there's no pretense about, it's my husband. Yeah, yeah. She's just like, fuck that guy.
And there's one thing as well that this episode does that nearly every episode of Twin Peaks does at some point, but I've not mentioned. And it's just so tremendously simple and effective, is the use of that first part of the Laura Palmer theme, that kind of ominous synth, you know, the night music, that used at nighttime is just so effective.
Yeah, of course you know, is.
And it's a card that the show pulls a lot, but every time they do it, it works. And there's something about the combination of those chords and nighttime that is just pure cinema and that is just pure filmmaking, and that they really struck upon that.
Yeah.
We see Eckhart go to see Catherine. They are going to have a dinner of a giant pig head for some reason. I mean, that's a scheming bastard's meal if ever I saw one.
Yeah, it really is.
And again, the filmmaking with all the Evelyn stuff works so much better. Like, you've got her in the blowing smoke rings in slow motion with jazz music playing. It just elevates.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that when James goes to see her, she's just like trying to burst his naive bubble. She's like, look, you know, do you want me to say that he was beating me or that I did it for love? She's like, I did it for the money and because I wanted to. You know, there's no romantic.
I think also there's an element of wanting to put him off.
Yeah.
Like feeling guilty for having made him fall for her.
Yeah, and I think like a lot of characters in Twin Peaks, I think like Ben, for example, and Catherine maybe, deep down, there's the, not necessarily goodness, but just the memory of goodness, the memory of being good. But they've got so used to the scheming. Like you see it later in the episode when her co-conspirator gives her this bullshit story. And when she kills him, you can see her immediately formulating it and go, he came in, he did this. He's like, these are characters that have lived in this world of subterfuge for so long, but it's just their oxygen and that's how they operate. Yeah. And even though there is this inner light or whatever you want to call it, like, and you do see that with Evelyn, I think it is genuine, you know, when she's saying to James, look, just get out of here, you know, you're pure and honest, and I didn't think that existed anymore. And I want to know that that's somehow preserved and alive out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's genuine. But ultimately, she has to protect herself.
Well, she's self-serving.
Yeah, because that's just how she lives. And there's a lot of that in Twin Peaks. He's, you know, the story she's given is, you know, say that he broke in and that you shot him and you shot him till he was dead.
Mm.
And I like the way that we keep cutting back to this image of her in this veil, seeing this fake mourning. We get the cosplay Civil War. And I think it's perfect as well because Sherilyn Fenn has the look of like Vivian Leigh.
Yes, she does.
And Elizabeth Taylor and actresses who you would see in that kind of garb in films of the era. And I love the fact that it's like a shit school play, isn't it basically?
It really is, yeah.
But Richard Beamer, you know, he plays it straight. He plays it with the same level of commitment that he plays any of his roles in Twin
Bobby
Peaks.
With the bugle. It's just the funniest bit of
it. And I love the way that the prop horse whinnies as well. I mean, that's such a kind of, I can imagine them when they were doing ADR being like, is that too much? Should we do that? That's great. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
And we see him, quote, win the war and collapse. And it's funny because obviously it's trying to evoke the Wizard of Oz.
Mm.
You know, I had this dream and you were there and you were there. And of course, David Lynch's fascination with The Wizard of Oz is very well known. You know, Wild at Heart is like a loose remake of The Wizard of Oz. There's a documentary that's just come out called Lynch Oz, but it's like a two-hour documentary just about...
David Lynch goes to Australia.
Dave-o! Lynch-o. No, but that's what it would be called if we'd have made it, wouldn't we?
Lynch-o.
It's about just how allusions to The Wizard of Oz in his movies. But, of course, this episode wasn't directed by David Lynch, but one of the things that I like about the approach of this episode is that it's almost trying to be influenced by the same things that David Lynch was influenced by, as opposed to trying to be influenced by David Lynch. And that, and you see that in other things, and that's when it works. Like Star Wars, people have always tried to emulate what George Lucas did and never succeeded until Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau said, no, you don't emulate George Lucas, you emulate Kurosawa, because that was who George Lucas was emulating, and then it will feel like Star Wars. You know, you've got to almost kind of skip a generation. And I feel like that's what's happening in this episode, is the fact that Diane Keaton seems influenced by photography and Fellini and Truffaut, as opposed to being directly influenced by David Lynch, which ends up making it feel more genuinely Lynchian than some of these other filmmakers who just have people doing mad shit because David Lynch is weird. You know.
I had such a brain fart moment then. I went off on an absolute internal tangent about maybe the song isn't is about a man called Mel Yell instead of Mellow Yellow.
It could be.
Is it an Australian band who sing that song?
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a Holy Ghosties kind of kind of scenario, isn't it?
I'm going to think about that. It's about a man called Mel Yell. Sorry, that is completely unconnected.
It's all stream of consciousness, isn't it? We see Windermere putting on one of his disguises, which I don't think is actually a terrible disguise.
Really. No, that's right.
We see him, we see the Queen. We see Donna run in to try and save James, and Evelyn shoots Malcolm. And she immediately starts recounting her alibi, or practicing her alibi.
I kind of love the fact that Donna just runs in there like, guns no be plan. Damned. She's just like, please don't hurt him.
And we see Windham Earl drop off a note for Audrey. And I like the little touch where it's like, oh, owls. And you're like, okay, there's got to be a... And it's like they've got a postcard rack that's just...
with the shittest photo of an owl
ever. It's just all owls, isn't it?
It's not even a good photo. It's literally the eyes.
We see... I like the way that Cooper looks at his suit.
Yeah.
Hanging out. Like, he's not wearing it, but he's still meticulously, you know, keeping... because he knows sooner or later he's going to have to wear it.
My pretty.
Soon. There's a mask, like a sort of death mask, in his bed, and a message from Windham Earl saying, your move. So any final thoughts, Hannah, before you tell us what we are talking about next time?
No, I just think... I think it was a solid episode, and I think... you know, it's like we've said, it's just, it's all good stuff going forward. So I feel like when we start watching an episode, I sort of forget the world around me, and all I'm in is Twin Peaks.
It is definitely a spell.
Which is kind of a lovely feeling. There are not a lot of shows in this world that do that to you.
And the thing is, it's odd because it's not necessarily a comforting thing, because the world of Twin Peaks can be a frightening, weird place. But it is very immersive.
But like in this episode, to the point where there were a couple of times I was saying, shit, I've got to talk about this in a minute. Like, I was just so, like, meandering along with what was happening and just having a lovely time and then forgetting the fact that, oh, no, like, keep your wits about you you've got to talk about it.
It's a dream, isn't it? And there's something kind of just naturally soporific
about that. Very much so.
Cool. Okay, quick reminder that we appreciate feedback at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com. We are at rewatchproj on Twitter and on Instagram. Check out our friend shows, comments on the YouTube channel, greatly appreciated, as are reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So what are we talking about next time, Hannah?
The next episode is called The Condemned Woman. Truman puts Hank in prison for the attempted murder of Leo, while Hank points the finger at Josie for the murder of Andrew Packard. Albert reveals that Josie shot Cooper. Ben enlists the help of John Justice Wheeler.
Alrighty, okay.
It is directed by Leslie Linker-Glatter, and written by Trisha Brock.
All right, gosh, so written by a woman, directed by a woman.
Indeed.
And we will be back with you very soon. Goodbye.
See ya.